This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 265. If ninjas is doing it, ninjas is doing it. Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And Pandalicious is under the weather.
Oh, you better believe it, mister.
Yeah, boy. She got the bug.
It hurts to speak, but I'm here to talk.
Because she's
to
a
you.
Trooper, and she loves you so much.
And Ninja would have been really pissed if I had said I couldn't do the show.
Yeah, pretty much. Same as how you make it to other people's shows.
I haven't been on RP Garnets in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. Actually. We had the family emergency.
Yeah.
Which turned out okay.
Yep, everything's good.
But I don't know about the other one.
But I will be there.
Or a square. Week. In some
fashion. But I'm here, so obviously.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm actually going to let Panda go first, so that way her voice lasts so she can do her piece.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as time permits, we'll do mine.
Yeah, so I'm going to be talking about my first impressions of Dark Souls, which got released last Tuesday. I didn't think I was going to get it.
Well, first of all, let's backtrack. What the hell is Dark Souls for those who may not be the initiated?
Oh my god, who the fuck are you listening to my show if you don't know what Dark Souls is? Go fucking look it up. No.
Do you want me to Google that for you?
No, I know what it is. So everyone knows that I'm a big Atlas nut, not because of Catherine, but because of another soul type game, Demon Souls.
Oh, the punishing game.
The sadomasochistic game that really lets you fall off of things that you could, in reality, fall off of and die. And it's the soul successor
It's the soul successor?
Yeah, it's the soul. It's like the spirit successor to Demon Souls.
Okay.
However, Atlus did not handle Dark Souls. That went over to Bandai Namco.
Okay.
And which was really surprising because it looks and feels like Demon Souls. Like,
is it really Bandai Namco or Namco Bandai?
I am never too sure. Those are the two companies. I just don't know who goes first.
I know.
I think it's Bandai Namco.
I know that it's listed Bandai Namco, but I don't know if it's because it's Japan, it's, you know, last one first.
I think so. But I think it's Bandai Namco.
Because I always say Namco Bandai.
So
maybe that's why they don't return any of my emails.
Probably not.
Whoops.
But From Software also had their hand in Dark Souls.
Okay.
And, you know, from my first impression, I mean, I was already expecting to do a lot of rage quitting and rage twittering about the rage quitting.
I did see your rage tweets.
I've only had two.
I know, but I saw them.
Yes, but they weren't nearly as infused with pure unadulterated hatred.
Right. As your previous Demon Souls.
I was already walking.
Those were like
bad.
You needed a unicorn, a fluffy unicorn.
Yep. I think it's because I already knew walking in what this game was going to kind of be like. Graphic wise, you know, obviously I got it for the PS3. It was available for the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like Demon Souls was an exclusive title, and it was. And I felt like if I was going to, you know, be dealing with the sole successor to that, that it should stay on the console that I originally played it on.
No, I'm the same way. If I start a franchise on a console, I typically like to continue
finish
the
it
franchise
on, that,
on
console.
That console.
Exactly. And that's exactly the same way that I feel. So I haven't played very much of it. Honestly, it's just as vague as Demon's Souls was. They really don't give you a whole lot to go on right off the bat. We're no longer in Boletaria. We are in a totally different place where you don't go to the Nexus. I don't know if you know much about Demon's Souls.
No.
All right, so Boletaria.
I read your rage tweets.
Yeah. Boletaria from Demon's Souls is this land that is pretty much cursed. And people who die in Boletari get sent to the Nexus, which is where all the, you know, souls hang out. And you can get your body back and return to the uncursed world, but obviously having your body in Demon Souls allows Red Phantoms or Dark Phantoms to come and kill you to reclaim their body and, you know, leave you back undead.
Mm.
And you're pretty much just trying to get rid of all of the, I call them mid demons, because your objective is to lull the Ancient One back to sleep, because he's the one who kind of initiates the curse. So when he's asleep, it doesn't really affect anything. And at the end, get a choice to either, you know, pretty much lull him back to sleep, kill this, I call her kind of like a companion, because she doesn't have much of a character, okay, but she helps you, like, she's your leveling up place, more or less. And you can either, you know, lull the one back to sleep, not kill her, and, you know, go on living, or kill her and take all of her power and, you know, pretty much control the Ancient One. I've played twice the playthrough for that, and the second one I was attempting to, you know, plot to kill her and be bad, and that didn't end up being what I did, which kind of sucked, because I kind of wanted to see that ending, but I'm not playing a third time to find out. definitely not.
You want to keep your sanity is what you're saying.
Well, if that's the case, then I shouldn't be playing Dark Souls, because... So, I mean, that's your lore, more or less, for Demon Souls, and Dark Souls is just, yeah, this land has this weird affliction that pretty much deals with the undead. So now, instead of dying and being in your spirit form and keeping your face and stuff like that, you actually look like a zombie.
Oh, awesome.
And they call you the Hollowed. So you can walk around and you know, you're in the land of the undead, but you have no human face. You've lost all your humanity. So from what I can gather, you're trying to restore humanity to this world. And you do that through these bonfires, which is also a really interesting game mechanic that I'll talk about in a second. So, I'll talk about that now. So bonfires.
See, it was a second.
Yeah, literally. Instead of in the original Demon Souls, you didn't get to set checkpoints. They would just happen for you.
Okay.
And if you died in a world, you actually had to start over. It was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if you, like, in the first area, if you opened a gate and then you died, that gate would still be open when you came back. So it's not like you had to redo everything, but you'd have to start from the beginning of the level to get back to that, you know, cheap door. You know, that cheat door.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that, really, as far as I've experienced in Dark Souls. Now they have these bonfires, which kind of act like the Nexus. So instead of going back to this place to go talk to this maiden who's just hanging around, who levels you, you go to the bonfire where you can do your leveling up. You can obviously quit the game. You will get an ability to kindle the fires or reverse your hollowing. So in order to kindle a fire, you can't be hollow. Just so you know, you have to have your body to set these flames, and these bonfires repel the darkness that is consuming not Boletari, but wherever the fuck you happen to be. Like I said, very loose lore, so they really don't tell you everything that you really need to know, and I think you'll come across it going through the game, which is why they don't say anything. Obviously, not being hollow allows, you know, like I said, Red Phantoms to come and rape you. You can't...
Rape is never a good thing. Well,
they can take your humanity and your body. And the really interesting thing about sitting at bonfires is it will replenish your health. They got rid of magic, like a mana bar in Dark Souls.
Okay.
Which kind of worried me at first, because I tend to play casters in these type of games. And now they have this attunement where you can attune spells to you. So you don't have a particular gauge of how big your mana bar is, but you have a certain amount of times you can use a particular spell.
Okay. So yeah. That seems like an even exchange.
I think so. The really bitchy thing about bonfires is, granted, if you light one and you sit at it, when you die, that's the last one that you sat at is the last one you start at. Okay. So they give you, not necessarily a quick save, but they always give you a checkpoint if you can find the bonfires. But all the enemies that you kill to get to it respawn.
Oh.
Yeah. So now it's like you're going through the woods, you kill like four dudes, you find a bonfire, you sit at it, you go to walk back down the path, and the four dudes are back. And it's like, oh, ass. You know, and I didn't realize it at first when I was playing, so I was like, I just killed those dudes. Nope. No, I didn't.
You temporarily expunge them from the face of the...
Yeah, but they come back. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case with bigger mid-bosses, because, you know, the demons that you encounter are not necessarily the big threat at the end. Kind of like with Demon Souls, you know, the ancient ones where you're really trying to get, but there's all these other fucks in the way.
Right.
And even though you got those big fucks, they've also got mid-fucks.
Right.
So it's like the mid-boss.
Right.
And I think when you kill them, like, they're usually knights and stuff like that. So far, I've killed one. Yeah, one. Luckily, he rolled off, you know, the side of...
A cliff.
Yeah, and died. Nice. So, yeah. So it works both ways, and I'm kind of glad that they did that so that they didn't not fall, in, but I would. Because
that would be cheap.
It would be cheap.
I hate that in games, like, especially when I was doing DOA a lot. I was like, you know, I like to ring out people because...
Isn't that like a cop-out?
It's not a cop-out. You need to be able to not cough, sorry, but use it effectively. No, I feel bad that you feel horrible. But you need to be able to use that mechanic effectively because it does, depending upon how many levels you have for the ring out, take a lot of life away. Unlike the ring out in Soul Calibur where it was just the end of the match, ringing out in Dead or Alive just took some life off the bar. So they would fall to the next level, they would eat some life off the bar, and if they weren't completely dead, they could continue fighting.
Oh, okay.
So it was a smart mechanic that you had to use, especially when you have bosses that are cheap.
Right.
Right. And so my thing was, you know, typically all you have to do is an uppercut or a low hard punt, roundhouse kick, punch, whatever, when your opponent is on the edge to knock them out. However, there were times when, for some characters, that wouldn't work. And I would always hate it because if they did the same move with the same character to me, I would every single time ring out. And I like the fact that, you know, from what you're describing,
everybody accountable, even
that
the
everybody
NPCs.
Is accountable, because I hate cheap mechanics like that.
Oh, no.
That takes away from gameplay for me much.
I've always thought that Demon's Souls was a very mature title, and a lot of people are like, oh, it's too hard. Ooh. And it's like, shut the fuck up and nut up and just do it. You will feel so much prouder.
Do you not remember some of your rage tweets from...
Oh, yeah. The first day, I was super pissed.
You were super pissed.
But when I finally beat the game, I felt so accomplished because I really felt like I had accomplished
something.
See,
that's the same way that I feel with Ninja Gaiden, which is why I'm like, you need to play it.
I know.
You need to.
Anyway.
Even on the easy.
No.
Just
anyway,
just try
and I
it
have
on
it
the
too,
easy.
I should.
You should.
But getting back to Dark Souls, so you're a hollow, you're trying to restore your humanity, you're trying to fight the darkness by rekindling the light of humanity. It feels very open world, which I don't know if I care for it very much.
Okay.
You know, because in Demon's Souls, when you're in the Nexus, you had portals that brought you to certain places. I think there were like five or six stones, archstones, that took you to a part of the world that you were going to fight these demons to unlock the area to get to the Ancient One. So I was like, oh, okay, I've got my hub.
Right.
Where I can hang out and build my weapons and do all that. And you don't have a place to go to because your bonfire is essentially your nexuses, but it's not like you're encountering people. So you encounter, you know, characters or NPCs, I'm going to assume, because I'm not very far, wandering through this world of the undead, more or less. Boss fights happen sporadically.
I don't like that.
No. And it's really kind of sucky because, one, when you're getting a grasp of a new game, and I mean, for Demon's Souls, I mean, I'm going to be completely honest. My first playthrough, I followed the IGN walkthrough verbatim.
Hey, you know what?
After I got through 1-1 without it, I was like, fuck no. No. So ING was like my best friend for those few months that I...
They were like your Bible?
And I kept it at night, snuggled with my laptop at night. Knowing in the next morning, which I've realized, if you're going to play Demon's Souls in the morning, make sure you eat a happy breakfast. Because you don't...
And a filling one.
You don't want to go into Demon's Souls without eating. you know, or Dark Souls for that matter. Because I noticed when I played early in the morning.
Would you get hangry?
I'd already be pissed going in. So, like, things I'd already recognized as traps, I'd be like, oh, that's not a trap. Oh, fuck, that's a trap. Why'd I do that? Why'd I do that to myself? Oh, I was pissed. But anyway, so it's very open world. You're navigating through this realm, and I haven't encountered any, like, NPCs that that I know are going to be like, oh, you're rekindling the light of humanity. I haven't met anybody yet. And I've encountered two bosses, and they pretty much put one right at the start of your game. You can avoid him at first, but you have to, you know, kill him at the end to get out. You're in an asylum for the undead. Because once you die...
An asylum?
Because in this realm, if you die and you reanimate, you are a part of the accursed. And they don't want the accursed roaming around, so they lock them all up to rot in this asylum, like a prison.
That's nice.
Right.
But you do all this shit to come back, and then you get thrown in an asylum. Right.
Well, part of the lore is that one of the undead will be chosen to restore the light of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everyone's like, that doesn't happen. We just lock them up because, you know, they're zombies. You know, can't trust a zombie. You know,
well, it's true. You can't trust a zombie.
So, I mean, they've actually glorified, you know, the zombie lore for me. And I love zombies. So I was like, oh, man, I'm a zombie. I'm a zombie sorcerer on top of that. So I got magic and shit. I don't need brains. I just need no mana. Now
you
I need
ain't
brains.
Got no mana.
Now I need brains. See, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The really sucky thing about boss battles in this scenario where you don't... For one, you don't always come across a bonfire. So, you know, like, I beat one boss and I was like, yes. And I got to the second boss and I beat him on my first try.
You know, nice.
Luckily, like, from the skin of my teeth. And I was like, oh, great. So I see this doorway. And this is really dumb because from Dark Souls, you know, if it's a wide open walkway, there's a fucking dragon. There's always a
there
dragon.
There be dragons?
There be dragons. And I see all these guys on the far end. I have no more mana because I used it to kill the boss to get to this door. And I'm just like, all right. Like, and I was like, let me walk out a little bit, because sometimes if you can walk out, you can aggro said dragon or event. Mm-hmm. And you can see it, you know, come down. You're like, oh, it's going to come from this direction. I know what's... No. So I'm walking on this bridge, and I start to notice that there's this weird gunk on the bridge.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, oh, shit. And I pan up with my character, and I notice that there's a giant silver dragon that kind of looks like the side of the mountain. So he was, like, camouflaging on this fucking mountain. And he just shot this giant fireball, killed all the bad guys, but also killed me. So I had to go all the way back. And I said, I have to go and fight that boss again.
Oh.
And I'm like, if this was like at 3 a.m, and I was just like, no. I'm like, I'm going to bed. I'm going to take the rage and like put it in sleep.
Sleep mode.
And I'm not going to deal with it right now. Like, I'm not going to deal with it right now. And no, but I thoroughly enjoy being challenged like that.
Mm-hmm.
So do I like the idea of an open world? Not particularly. I feel really lost. And I don't know if that was a purpose, like a move that they did on purpose, because, you know, they want you to feel just as confused about things as your character is supposed to feel.
Right. Which very well could be.
It would be well played now that I think about it. But I feel very uneasy because I'm like, I don't know where I'm supposed to go. Oh, look, this looks like a walkway. Nope, it's a dead end that plummets to a giant chasm that, you know, kills me again.
Wah, wah, wah.
Right. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know anything if there's any particular type of world tendency thing where the more times you die, I don't think any of that comes into play because, you know, Demon Souls did have tendency events, because if it was like a light tendency, it was a little bit easier to navigate a world, or if it was a pure dark tendency, it was like ass rape 103.
Is that advanced ass
raping? Yes, that's advanced ass raping.
All right.
But if you have a PS3 or even a, you know, a 360, like I said, it is cross-platform. If you played Demon's Souls, I would recommend to get it on the PS3. I feel like it should have been an exclusive-only title. I'm not sure what their reasoning was for
sales.
Probably. Well, at the same time that it dropped, so many other things were dropping, so it's like, we gotta do something, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Because, month is, like, ridiculous.
A friend of mine did go and get the collector's edition, which gave him this art book, which I'm a little concerned about because his art book seemed just glued together. It was pretty
cheaply
constructed, but the art was beautiful. But like, I was trying to look through it and I'm like, I had to carefully flip each page because I could literally see it coming out of the binding. And I was like, he paid a lot of money for this and I'm not ripping it because I don't have the money to buy another one for him. It came with that. It came with the soundtrack. And I believe it also comes with a guide. However, you know, he was expecting it to actually be physical, all these things, and the guide and the soundtrack are audio. Like, they're digital.
The guide is an audio guide?
It's like, I mean, it's a digital guide, but the soundtrack's obviously an audio.
So it's like a PDF?
Yes. And they give you a code to unlock it, and his code doesn't work. So...
that's like triple lame sauce. Like I would get in touch with a vendor. Like,
oh yeah, he did. The minute it happened, he called, and emailed and raged and like punched a wall, I think he said. But I mean, I didn't go and reserve it. I just walked in and got a standard copy. And you know, I often talk about collector's editions being something of substance. Like, they have to be really something of substance
for me to watch. We've talked about before. We're in total agreement on that.
You know, and you know, I'm a big fan of art books, but I mean, if it's gonna be, it needs to be well crafted, and this just wasn't, which makes me concerned about other people who get art books, and you know, they're not nearly as up to par as I think I got an art book for Soul Calibur, and that was really
well. Soul Calibur collector's editions are always fantastic. I mean, the quality that Bandai Namco puts into their stuff is really fantastic. I would say that the last few collector's editions that I've done have also had pretty decent art books. One of the things that I've noticed, though, is that they've started trending to the digest size art book as opposed to the full 8.5x11 or coffee table size, which I think is kind of cheap. And I know that probably a big piece of that is because they don't want people scanning those things full size and, you know, creating their own artwork, which is one of the things I actually really enjoy doing with the art books.
So they're stopping people like you.
No, because I still scan the little ones, too, because I can stitch them together in Photoshop, so it really doesn't slow me down at all.
Right.
But I think that it's a way to, you know, do less content in an art book rather than have a full 28-pager. They'll have, you know, something that now is 56 pages, but really it's not. When you put those on 8.5, you're back to, like, a 20-page book.
Right.
And I would much prefer to have, you know, a nice coffee table size 24-pager than, you know, a small 56-er. Right. But
like the Assassin's Creed Brotherhood one was a small one, and it didn't even sit like a digest. It sat like... It was landscape.
Right, but it's digest size as far as the dimensions. It's just not portrait digest, it's landscape digest. Yeah. Which is, I'm fine with that, just like, you know, the Gears one is also landscape digest size. The, not the Mortal Kombat one, but the God of War 3 art book was also landscape digest size. And that one really hurt my soul because there were some great scans in there that I really wanted on some character designs, that really took me a while to get laid out properly on my scanner to get a good scan. So I think that, you know, part of it is size and boxing because they don't want to give out too big of a box. But, you know, if you're doing a box size already that could hold an 8.5x11 book or a coffee table book, just don't bitch out, make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I love putting that stuff on display. I love going through all that content. It inspires me when I'm looking to do my next round of designs for whatever it is, webpage, magazine, whatever. So I really prefer having that larger format. But like we've discussed on plenty of occasions, I don't want cheap ash materials in my collector's editions.
No, and I was really disappointed.
Up the quality. I'm paying you good money.
Right.
I'm paying for these extras. Like, let's up it.
Well, I think there wasn't that much of a pay difference between the standard Dark Souls and the Collector's Edition.
Oh, then, you know, that's part of the reason why.
Yeah, the craftsmanship was a little subpar.
Yeah.
But if you liked Demon's Souls and you want to feel challenged again, then this will be really, really up your alley. Like I said, I'm not very far. Just saw the second boss. So, I mean, I'm really still in the infancy of this game. And as quickly as I seem to be raging, it might be a while.
It's gonna be a bit, is what she's trying to say.
But I thoroughly still enjoy it. I'm glad I went out and got it. And I feel pretty whole in the games that I know will beat me and beat me and beat me.
But you won't give up.
But I won't.
You're like Eshdog the second.
Yep, I am a persistent bitch.
And that's good. And I won't stop. That's a good trait.
And I won't stop until he's mine.
Well, there you go. Well, I know there's also a couple other things that are popping out. And one of them, I think, you're better suited to speak to than I am because I haven't played it. I've watched people play it, but which is the Dead Rising series, because off the record, which Dead Rising 2 off the record, they just released a trailer for it. It pops out, actually, by the time you hear this podcast, it should actually be available for purchase because I think that drops on the 11th.
Right.
But basically, from what I understand, again, because I didn't play the series, there's a character in one that wasn't the lead character in two.
Yes, in the first Dead Rising, it was Frank West. I mean, he was a reporter. He uncovered a lot of stuff, and it got him a lot of praise, and then finally his snooping got the better of him, and then he wasn't really awesome. And what essentially happens in, I think, pretty much one and two is you have this guy who was built up to something glorious and then it got taken away. Because they both end up on this show, Terror's Reality, TIR,
mm-hmm.
which we saw in the trailer. And you see that Frank even participated in TIR. And so does, whose name I can't remember, Chuck Green from Dead Rising 2.
Mm-hmm. The guy in the yellow jacket?
Mm-hmm, yes. And
see, I know that.
I played two, and believe it or not, I'm on the last, I'm fighting the bad guy, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's never played it.
Oh, no spoilers.
No, I'm not right. In the mood, but I'm at the ending boss guy now, and yeah, it's a guy, so ooh, spoiler, he's me.
I knew it was
going to... Ooh, it's a male.
It was going to ooze out just a little bit.
And I haven't jumped back into that because, oh, I don't know, I kind of got distracted with other games, which is kind of... even before that, Catherine, replaying Demon's Souls to get psyched up for Dark Souls. So, I mean, yeah, other things got in the way of that. But in Dead Rising 2, off the record, we were actually seeing a merging of the characters from 1 and 2 in the 2 setting. So Frank West has made it to Fortune City at the same time that Chuck is going through his ordeal in Fortune City in 2. And I think Frank is... you know, armed with his camera, and he's pretty much taking, you know, pictures of everything that's going on. He's trying to uncover the conspiracy from a different angle than Chuck is. Because Chuck just kinds to, yeah.
You that's because we had grits, bacon, and eggs for breakfast.
And brandy. I had brandy in my tea
you
this
did
morning.
Have brandy.
Several cups of that.
Several brandies, actually.
But Chuck just happens to fall into these situations, and he's slowly piecing things together where, I mean, Frank is a reporter and he's trained to look at these things. So, I mean, we'll probably get a lot more insight to what's going on in Fortune City through Frank's eyes, which is why I think they went...
So, is it a parallel story?
Yeah. So, while Chuck is, you know, bashing zombies, trying to get Zombrex for his daughter, Katie, because you have to give her Zombrex every day between the hours of, like, fuck it's dawn and fuck it's nearly noon.
Okay.
And you gotta give it to her every day because if you don't, she will turn. That's the great thing about Dead Rising. You can be human and be infected as long as you take Zombrex, which kind of reminds me of Valtrex, which I thought was for herpes.
It is.
But so zombie infection
is like herpes,
which can be, you know, you don't want it to flare up ever because you'll die.
Right, and you don't want to transmit it to your partner. So I have, you know, the zombie virus. And I don't.
Yeah, see, no. Mm-mm. Well, unless he was a hot got. I don't think it was Zombrex for the rest of our lives.
Right off my tongue. Here, take it.
Maybe not. That's a little but so yeah, it's a parallel story between these two guys, and I think you're actually going to see a playoff of both of the characters, which I'd like to see how they're going to do it. I mean, there's, you know, Dead Rising 2 was a very open world. You could pretty much navigate all of Fortune City, which is pretty much Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
In case you didn't figure that out.
Oh, yeah, no, I got it.
You know, and there's so many things that, as Chuck, you could easily not do. So I'm like, it's easy to see that my Chuck would never have encountered Frank if I never went over here or I never did this. There's just so much going on
mm-hmm.
that it's plausible that these two main characters could be in the same place at the same time, experiencing similar but not so similar things.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. I'm like, I can just bear my belief long enough to see that. Because, I mean, there's enough going on.
So do you think that you'll play it once you finish your Chuck line of story?
I actually am kind of curious to see how they are going to interject, you know, Frank West into the story. But I didn't play one. So, I mean, a lot of people have a lot of appreciation for Frank West as a character. And I didn't play him. So I don't know if I'm going to feel the same significance between these two meeting.
Do you think that the advent of this parallel line was to please the fans? That were in love with Frank?
Because
there was some pushback when 2 came out that Frank wasn't going
to
be the lead character.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, really? Like, they really were expecting him to you know, be the front man for the series. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. Like, it feels to me like the whole Left 4 Dead 2 thing, where they did a lot of downloadable content that actually brought the first team and the second teams together, which is kind of awkward because, for one, the second team is kind of in New Orleans, and they don't really exactly tell you where the first team is exactly, but I always assumed that they were more East Coast, really, so I thought they were, like, probably, oh, I don't know, Pennsylvania, so then, Pennsylvania, so then I'm like, so the first team, know of Bill, Zoe, black guy,
and Bill, Francis. Zoe, black guy,
Lewis, and Francis, the biker. I'm like, so these four navigated from Pennsylvania all the way to Louisiana. I'm like, okay. And nobody, you know, getting the axe before them. It's a little hard for me to chew because you're in a zombie apocalypse. I'm like, you guys are pretty awesome. Yeah, four scenarios, you made it. Mm-hmm, I get it. But what happened between those four situations? Because, you know, at the end of Mercy, you get helicoptered out. So I'm like, so what happened to that helicopter? What happened to that boat? What happened to that tank?
Like, wait, they had a tank?
Well, because in each scenario, you go through so many chapters, and at the end, it's pretty much a giant, how long can you last before your ride comes?
Mm-hmm.
That happens in Left 4 Dead 2 also. But I always thought to myself, I'm like, so I got helicoptered out, but now I'm here. I'm like, what happened to the helicopter? Did we get shot down? Because zombies can't shoot. What happened? Like,
that's
it doesn't.
True.
So, I mean, there's a lot of loopholes that people don't think about in these games. And
I'm like, all of the zombies in Dead Rising do use weapons.
Yes. Yes, they do. Or, well, some of them do. The boss types do. And then there's just some crazy people in Dead Rising 2 who, you know, are trying to fight out the zombies and shoot at you with, like, sniper rifles. Bastards. But, so, I mean, I think this might be kind of pandering to the fans who really liked Frank in the same way that Valve kind of pandered to the Left 4 Dead universe. Because when this second one came out, they were really surprised that, you know, they didn't tell us what happened to the original four. And then when you finally do actually meet the original four in the DLC, like in true fashion, someone actually did, you know, die. Which makes sense. You're in an apocalypse. Not everybody's gonna make it.
Right.
So, you know, you can't meet everybody and save everybody. No one has that kind of luck.
Right.
You know, so, and they did that in The Passing, which I really liked. Now, granted, I didn't even play The Passing, but I appreciated that they tried to stay as close to a real apocalypse as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kind of like with Dead Island. I mean, Dead Island, zombies are using weapons, and zombies don't give a fuck. They don't care if you've got, you know, you're escorting someone, and the escort's a dumb bitch who runs in front of you. I'm like, I thought I was escorting you.
I know. I hate escort missions where they're like, yeah, I gotta go this way. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm supposed to do the... And they're, like, running in front of you, so then you gotta run to catch
up. One guy's like, come on, man. I'm like, dude, like, there are zombies in that pool, and you just walked by that. You aggroed those zombies.
Yep.
I'm like, and I've got a broken paddle and, like, a bat with nails in it. What do you want from me? And then he's like, get them off me. I'm like, no, fucking die. And then he died. I'm like, shit, I gotta do it again. But but they made it more realistic in that. And I mean, I like that in Left 4 Dead 2. I mean, I'd like to see how Dead Rising 2, you know, off the record, is going to play that up. Because, I mean, we've got our existing main character and a new main character that people have grown to, you know, oh man, wife got fucked up and zombified and trying to keep your, like, little daughter Katie from, you know, her flare-up of zombie.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of get attached, so I'm like, what will happen? I'm like, because I don't feel both of them should, I don't want to say that one has to die, but something's got to happen in a serious fashion to either one. Like, either, you know, Frank gets, actually, I think he is infected. So Frank is infected, I believe, in the first game. So he has to take Zombrex while he's fighting everything. So actually, that might not happen. Maybe, prediction, maybe something's going to happen where, you know, fucking Chuck has to take out Frank because he didn't take his Zombrex and he turned into a zombie and he had to, like, end him. Which I know the fans would be pissed about. But I think something like that would really escalate the story. But I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think I would give this a shot, though. And doesn't it release in November? Is it November?
No, I believe it drops in October.
Oh, maybe the end of October, then?
Yeah, I think it drops.
Probably closer to Halloween.
No, I think it drops...
next week?
This week.
No shit.
Yeah, shit.
Wow, shit.
Mm.
No joke. It's... No way.
Yes, way. I'll double check on that and I'll put it in the podcast notes, but I'm pretty sure it drops this week, actually.
So, I mean, I might have to re-budget my budget. Maybe.
We'll see. It is the hardest button to button.
It is.
So, if you pick it up, it would be interesting to watch you play it, because for me, I enjoy watching you play Dead Rising, but it's definitely not a game that, like, I would enjoy, just because... It's such a constant onslaught, which...
Oh, man, you're literally swimming. Like, there's a difference. Like, literally, in Dead Rising 2, you're swimming in zombies. They're just everywhere. I mean, in Dead Island, they come at you. Like, some are kind of looming around, but then some will aggro and attack you. These guys, you can actually kind of walk around a lot of zombies in Dead Rising 2. They are more like Ramiro zombies.
Right.
You know, so they're not, you know, they're not cognitive. They can't build winces to pry you out of, you know... Oh, I can't even get into that. But, so, I mean, you can easily avoid a lot of unnecessary fighting unless you want to level up, which this game had a really great leveling system. You know, you could pretty much just onslaught an entire mall of zombies and beef yourself up for stuff, which makes some sense. But, I mean, like I said, Dead Island, they were around everywhere, but, you know, they all kind of came at you the minute you came on the map.
Yep.
Like, oh, there's someone
who's not infected. Everything was aggroed.
Yeah, exactly, on top of that. So, we'll see. We'll see if I'll end up, you know, picking this up. It's definitely up my alley. We already know that I'm big into the Z.
Yeah.
So.
You're DTZ.
I am down to zombie.
Can't believe I just
said that. Just made a Jersey Shore reference.
I did.
Before me.
I know. And I don't even watch that show.
I know you don't, which means it's laying eggs in your brain.
I know. And that's all from you.
Yeah.
You're a bad influence on me.
Yes, I am.
You are.
And I'm not apologizing.
Well, that's good. You should never apologize for yourself.
Somebody it's too late to apologize. It's too late.
I'm not singing it.
I can't sing.
Other game news, obviously, Rage from Bethesda dropped. I've been talking about this game for, like, ever and a half. And I have yet to actually go and pick up my reserve copy, so I need to do that this week. But I'm really looking forward to playing it. And I've seen nothing but good things about it, with the exception of audio dropping out here and there. So hopefully by the time I pick up my copy, there's a fix in place for that. Because I've had a few people... on my Twitter stream, rage tweeting about that. But otherwise, it's a beautiful game. And again, running at full 60 frames per second and full res, you know, is awesome to me. So I like the story. I've written about it. It's actually in the magazine. I can't say enough about this game other than I really want to get my hands on it. And hopefully I will have a more in-depth coverage for you next week, which that will depend upon the next thing that I'm going to talk about. Well, no, it's going to be two things down the road because there are a couple other things I got to get out news-wise. The Rabbids game is getting ready to drop. And I mentioned it after talking about it on our E3 show and in a couple of write-ups. What's interesting to me, actually, is that Ubi has worked out a deal with Nickelodeon, and they're actually creating a Rabbids TV show for Nickelodeon, which I think makes a lot of sense. I think a while ago we talked about, you know, Rabbids being, like, the perfect vehicle for being a cartoon.
Right.
Just because they're so cartoonish.
Already to
and
start.
And they're so odd to begin with. Like, every Rabbids game that I've played, even the one with Rayman where you're doing the cow toss, like, I felt like I was really kind of actively in a cartoon. So I think it's kind of interesting that they've actually inked a deal. The cartoon will actually start running in, like, early 2013. So they just inked the deal, literally, like, signed the paperwork.
Now, here's where my concern is, because we already know that the Rabbids are very, verbose and open and, you know, like to push the envelope on things that, you know, press on they're comfort levels.
Well, they're inappropriate, but they're not sexually inappropriate.
Right,
so
right,
I think that works for Nickelodeon.
Well, I mean
it's no worse than Ren and Stimpy. You have to remember, the original Ren and Stimpy was the Nickelodeon show.
I know. And then they tried to reboot it for adults and it just didn't work. Which is weird because its initial run-through, even though geared towards children, was a very adult-themed show.
Yeah, it was a very adult-themed show, but it wasn't, like, sexually charged adult theme.
No, it was unwashed lederhosen.
Exactly.
And a booger collection.
The Crick Felucci reboot, first of all, made them gay.
And it made them gay.
Yeah, because there was, like, a whole episode with... See, don't yell. There's a whole episode where, like, Ren was like, I'm the pitcher, you're the catcher. I'm the pitcher, you're the catcher. Yeah, you can't make the what face without a noise, because this is an audio podcast. I know, your throat. So, anyway, that aside, I think that it'll be interesting. I think that it will be a lot of fun for younger kids, just in how the Rabbids look and the way that they talk. That alone, I mean,
what,
like,
will it be? Like, small vignettes of multiple Rabbids doing stuff? I mean, or are they going to bring, like, Rayman in, who's going to be, like, your, you know, your protagonist in the world?
I don't know
Rabbids.
If they're going to Tom and Jerry it, or if they're going to, you know, like, Muppet Baby it. And Rabbids are always doing and having, like, little adventures in their own little head.
Be careful, Miss Piggy.
But I think it'll be neat to see what they end up doing, and if it really adds to the Rabbid universe or not.
Right.
You know? Just Dance 3 also dropped. And the reason why this is interesting to me is because it dropped on all platforms.
Yes, it did.
Including Kinect.
Yes, it
and
did.
So I'm really interested in playing the Kinect version and comparing it to the Wii version that I played and really figuring out if it is a competitor for Dance Central or not. Because that's one thing that I always had the decision, like, made when it was just on the Wii. Like, no, it's no competitor
no,
to Dance Central.
Because you're still holding
a controller and the track is on the controller. It's
right,
not
so they're
your whole
tracking
body.
Your whole movements. But for the Kinect, it'd be looking at your entire movement?
It'd be looking at your entire movements, and it's up to four people. So you can do the entire posse, four people.
Wow, okay.
So this will be really cool to test out. So I'm definitely going to pick it up.
I don't know, though, because the thing about Just Dance was, you know, you could follow the routine, or, you know, you could even, you know, simply, like, namely put, you could just dance.
Right.
So,
and
I mean,
you could still do that in the freestyle thing, but as far as the gameplay, the story mode, whatever you want to call that,
the dancer mode. The road to stardom?
Sure, whatever. It is.
You're dancing.
It's doing the it's doing the routine. And so, like, the thing that sold me on it was there was some video, I think, from PAX Prime, where a group who had dressed up as all of the ninjas from Mortal Kombat.
Oh, okay.
So Scorpion, Rain, Amarak, and Sub-Zero were doing a routine together.
Wow.
On Just Dance 3. And I was like, sold, American! If ninjas is doing it, ninjas is doing it.
Get it?
Got it. Yes, I got it. I got it. All right.
Because so you're a ninja and they're ninjas. And you're a group of ninjas. I get it. Ninjas.
Synergy. So I think it'll be really
interesting.
Ninja-see. But I think it'll be interesting to compare that now and Dance Central. And really, I think the apples-to-apples comparison is that to Dance Central 2, because Dance Central 2 is going to have the multiplayer, you know, active multiplayer, as I like to call it.
Yes.
For the dancing. So I think that'll be really cool to see. Plus, they've upped the music content, so it's not kids' bop. Music...
Basically. I didn't think all of it was... I'm sorry, Teach Me How to Jerk was not a kid bop.
No. I'm talking about Just Dance.
Oh, okay.
Because their music definitely aired more on the bubblegum pop side of the world.
Yes, yes.
And so because they've added the team component in, they've actually upped the music library. So again, I think it's more of an apples-to-apples comparison. And, you know, either way you flow, it's still a great workout.
Did you ever actually play the board game Apples-to-Apples?
No.
It's...
We should do that.
I don't have it.
Well, I can get it. We'll go to Toys R Us. So that's pretty much all the game news I have. The piece for me that's up next is the sad piece, but hopefully we'll have some fun stuff at the end.
I hope my stuff made you slightly or happier so that the downfall won't be nearly as bottoming.
It's not as... I'm not going to bottom out as bad. I'm doing much better now. So my disclaimer before I even get into all of this, obviously I'm about to talk about Apple stuff. And I am a stockholder, so, you know, that's my disclaimer. When you buy Apple things, I actually make money. I'm probably not going to try to talk you into buying anything, because my big thing, and I'm sure you're all well aware, because you would really have to be living under a rock.
Near a hotspot.
Yeah.
Or a McDonald's.
Yeah. To not be aware that Steve Jobs passed. And my whole thing about it... Because we didn't put anything up on the website when it happened. And I went back and forth on whether or not we should. And I was in a really dark place because, you know, people say fangirl, fanboy, and they toss those things around. I don't necessarily see a negative connotation to fanboy and fangirl a lot of times. But But I can honestly say that Steve Jobs truly did change my life. Actions that he took at Apple, at Next, actually affected my path. It is because of decisions that Apple made early on that, you know, AOL got some serious funding and came into existence. And I actually met my husband on AOL, so that there's a line there.
6 degrees of internet separation.
I have mentioned before that I worked at Apple, both at retail and at the corporate office. It really, really affected me. No joke, Steve's passing affected me more than Michael Jackson's passing.
Wow.
And it's...
I'm more excited than that. My voice just hurt.
Yeah, it really did. Like, if you are friends with me on Facebook, you already know. Like, my entire wall from the 5th on has just been, like, a ridiculous memorial.
Oh, no, they were talking about it on the news. They gave it a lot of coverage. A lot of people instantly on YouTube and Twitter.
It crashed Twitter and Facebook for a while and Google Plus. Because whether you like Apple or you don't like Apple, whether you like Apple products or don't like Apple products, you Disney, Pixar, love them, hate them, whatever. The fact of the matter is that many innovations that came to be under Steve Jobs truly affected the technology market. They truly affected really the world when you think about it. Okay? Smartphones, the leader was Palm for many, many years with the Trio. That was like the gold standard. And Palm kind of sort of exists. I mean, you know, they're HP, got them now. But when you think about smartphones and really what they were, They were $600 and $700. They did email. They did calendars. You know, it wasn't really until, you know, the late 90s that they were doing photography in any kind of way. And even that wasn't, you know, multi-megapixel photography. And they weren't doing the internet until, you know, I'm going to say probably around, in a real meaningful way, 2003, 2004. You drop the iPhone, and it does revolutionize the smartphone market. People get a glimpse of, you know, what you could try. When the phone first came out, you know, people were like, nobody's going to want to buy this thing. It's huge. And, you know, the screen is ridiculous. It doesn't have a camera. You know, all these things. And then they touched it. And people kind of went, wow, that's really cool. I could use that. And then the smartphone market, you know, all the competitors were like, well, we can do it bigger and better. And it bred great competition. You know, it you know, birthed a new need for better operating systems on these smartphone devices. And so you ended up, you know, with what's now Windows 7, and you ended up with Android and everyone trying to make their smartphone better than what was the new gold standard, which was the iPhone. Whether you love it or you hate it, you can't deny that it changed the market, and you can't deny that other innovations under Steve changed the market. I mean, look at what happened to tablets. Look at what happened to, you know, notebook computers. Okay,
Agreed. I never thought I would get a netbook, and here I am with a MacBook Air.
Exactly. You know, our mom is addicted to K-dramas that she watches on an iPad.
Which is a tablet.
Okay, it is very difficult for me to put into words without getting emotional, so I'm really trying hard not to get emotional. But it was a very sad moment for me, realizing that the world is now without Steve Jobs, because I admire the man. I admire his work ethic. I admire his innovation, his passion. It really did affect me when I was working at Apple. And, you know, I've spent the last, you know, almost week now getting back in touch with my Apple family. Because if you've ever worked Apple retail, whether you've left under positive
or negative
reasons, you still have a very special bond with the retail people that you work, because the Apple retail experience is different than any retail experience that you'll have anyplace else. And you really do develop some very close friendships. And I've been, you know, touching base with all of my Apple family, and we've been sharing photos from our different times and different launches and things like that, and sharing t-shirts that we still have from retail, and, you know, videos that we made, you know, when we were back in house goofing off and doing stupid shit trying to learn the new applications that were coming out. And, you know, I've touched base again with all of my Cupertino friends, many of which are still at Infinite Loop, and it's just very touching for me to see all of the outpourings on Twitter and on Facebook of, you know, the fans and the non-fans saying, you know, I don't like the iPhone, I don't like Macintoshes, but, you know, I am sad to hear that Steve is gone, because he has done some amazing, amazing things with the support and help of a lot of people. But it's just so weird to think of Apple and Steve not be part of it. You know, even when Steve was pushed out back in, like, 85, and I wasn't that involved with Apple at the time. I actually hated Apple at the time. But it was still hard to imagine, even then, the guy who started the company, one of the guys,
in the basement, or actually in the garage,
you know, wasn't part of that company. Like, how do you not be part of something that you, with your hands, built?
Let's wait a couple years when I kick you out of Ash.
And then, you're so smart. You're so cute.
I'm just kidding.
Technologically, you meet me.
Yes.
And then when he came back was really when things changed enough and quality changed enough that I became passionate about it. And it's very sad for me to see that. And so there have been all kinds of different tributes. The Oatmeal did one where they changed the homepage to a sad Mac. With a tear coming down that just said goodbye underneath it. And the click-through actually went to a cancer donation website, which I thought was really very fitting. There have been people bouncing around the idea of creating Fuck Cancer t-shirts.
Wow.
With
they should not be t-shirts. They should be Steve Jobs turtlenecks.
I agree. I have to say that I did buy an iPhone 4S. One of my more favorite things that are going around on the internet is that the iPhone 5 wasn't released and that the 4S stands for Steve. And there are lots of memorials that are still being carried on and added to still over the weekend at Apple stores around the globe. If you use the Flipboard application, there's actually a Remembering Steve collection from a Tumblr page where people are just taking pictures of memorials at their local Apple stores that keep growing and keep growing. And one of the things that I'm seeing a lot on post-it notes that are being left on the glass in front of the buildings are just 4S's and 4 Steve and 4 Steve. So I think that it's really cool. I think that it is a unifying experience, whether you love or hate. It is a unifying thing, and I kind of likened it, and I think I've seen it mentioned other places as well, as like this for especially my generation and probably even your generation, this is kind of our John Lennon passing, you know, because he was an icon. So on the Apple tip, I bought an iPhone 4S. I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I know.
To make that happen. And it finally went through at like 4:30, 4:45. And I'm really happy about it. I have already decided to build a 4 Steve skin for it that I will put on it probably as soon as I actually make the order for the damn thing. And it's kind of my thank you, Steve. But at the same time, there's a whole slew of things that are dropping from Apple. And I think they kind of got a little overshadowed. So just really quickly, the iPhone 4 on sale. You can pre-order it now. It will actually drop on the 14th, so you'll actually be able to get it. I think that there will be events at all of the Apple stores. I think that you will see lines like you have never seen before. AT&T themselves, within the first 12 hours that the phone was on sale, sold over 200,000 of them.
Wow.
In the 12 hours. And not to be outdone, the phone is now available on AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint. So the major networks now all have the phone. I believe that Sprint still has their unlimited plan that's available. So if you have a plan that sucks right now and you want to pick up the phone, it might not be a bad time to switch to Sprint before that goes away. Because every single carrier that's gotten the phone initially had an unlimited plan. And then when people started using the phone and using the unlimited, they went, oh, we got to limit this shit right now. So just be mindful of that. But you also have iCloud that's dropping. iCloud actually goes live on the 12th, which gives you your document editing in the cloud. So think Google Docs, but actually across all of your devices. So if I create a document in Pages on my MacBook Air, which is running Lion, I can, when I'm on the go on my iPad, bring up that exact document, make changes to it. And when I get back to my MacBook Air, those changes show up in my document. I don't have to go and redo it or re-download it or anything like that. They'll just sync all the way through, which is a cool thing. And that you can edit in the cloud is really nice, especially for the road warriors who travel a lot. You also have your iTunes in the cloud, which means your music that you've purchased, you don't have to always keep it on your phone. So if I decide that I want to bring down the Amy Winehouse album again, I don't have to sync it before I leave the house. As I'm on the go over my data network, I can just go ahead and re-download it on my device or just the one track that I may want to hear at that time. And then when I sync my device when I get home, I can either keep it on the device or take it off. So it really allows you to have your music available.
All of your library. All of your stuff with you at all times.
Really, exactly. Without having to have, physically, at least for me, a 2 terabyte iPhone. Because that would be a massive brick.
That'd be big.
That would be huge.
That's what she said.
It is, in fact, what she said. So you have that. And then you also add on the layer of Match, which for $25 a year will allow you to have your music that you didn't purchase in iTunes if it is available in iTunes, available to you. So all your CDs that you ripped, also being able to get them from the cloud, just for the $25 a year is pretty cool for me, because I still have a lot of music in my library that was, you know, obtained at a time when iTunes didn't exist. And there were other...
Hello, Napster.
...services...
Hello, Kazaa.
...that existed for the procurement...
previously mentioned.
Digital music.
Hello, things. Rhapsody.
So, the idea of being able to match that stuff and get that available and maybe cleaned up some with proper tags and things like that without having to spend too much time on it is pretty exciting for me. Then you add on all the stuff that is new in the new iPhone, which, please believe me, we will be talking about after...
No, she'll be talking about.
I'm going to let you play with it, too.
I don't want to.
Do you want to inherit my old phone?
When the time comes.
And you
when,
would like that.
When the three wolf moon appears,
I will inherit
your four.
I think it's fitting that the 4S is the phone that I will be rocking for Steve, after Steve. The world is not the same, and it's a little less brighter, it's a little less crazy, and, you know, that's sad, but I think that there are great things on the horizon left to be, and for everyone that has, you know, participated in and endured my remembrance of Steve on Facebook, I thank you for your patience, and for everybody that joined in, I thank you for your warmth and your kindness, and he will be missed, for sure. But the iPhone exists, the iPad exists, Lion exists, so his presence will still be felt for quite a long time.
I agree.
So long, Steve. Last thing on the game notes, because we can't end on a downer. Gotta bring that back up. For those gamers who might be a little bit,
broke?
Yes. There's some amazing sales that are going on right now.
When you're broke, sales.
Not broke, but, you know, just like, hey, man. So if you haven't checked it out yet, Target is having an amazing run on games. So if you're wanting to do a little early Christmas shopping or holiday shopping, depending upon the holidays that you celebrate.
Christmas wants America.
No, Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa.
That one. Or just Festus.
Or Festivus.
Festivus.
Yes. Festivus.
Yeah, I'm tired.
I know you are. And by that I mean, like, right now, one of the things that's going on, and you need to check with your local Targets to make sure, but they've got a deal where if you get a Kinect Xbox 360 bundle, the 4GB one, they throw in, obviously, the Kinect Adventures game, but they also will give you a $75 gift card with the purchase. So it basically works out in your favor because you can use that gift card to purchase some additional games right off the bat with your Xbox 360. It is the 4GB bundle, but, you know, you factor in the $75 gift card, that actually brings the price of the doggone thing down to like $220, which isn't bad. To have a Kinect Xbox 360 bundle wouldn't suck as a holiday gift under, you know, a tree or something. Wink, wink, wink. And then they also have all kinds of bundles with games, without games, that are available. Some games are throwing on, like, really deep discount, like up to 50% off, that's in the flyer. So now would be a good time to get an early jump on some games.
Thank you, Recession.
For the holiday, which is pretty damn cool. Also, a good time to check out, because I believe that, what do they call it? Quickster now?
Is Netflix, Quickster, and Quickster.
Yeah.
Thanks to SNL.
Yes, and Quickster.
And Quickster.
Yeah. Is throwing up some of the list of the potential games that they're going to be having available for rental. So you might want to check that out and figure out if it's a good time to give the gift of Quickster for the holiday or give the gift of Gamefly for the holiday to somebody, because it's easy to gift either one. So just some, you know, I'm not trying to tell you to, you know, buy somebody that. I'm just saying, you might want to buy that for somebody. So that's all the stuff I got.
Don't look at me.
Games, Steve, and games.
Steve, games. It's a game sandwich with some sweet Steve.
Sweet Steve in the sweet middle. Steve. By the way, have you ever seen pictures of Steve Jobs when he was younger? Oh my god, he was so hot. Anyway! Just saying. I'll show you a picture later.
I've seen him. And I
went through the stubble and the thing where he looks like Ashton.
Anyway, shit your dick. Shit your dick. Go.
Did you say shit your dick?
Ow. Ow. Yes. Ow. Shit you dick.
Well, hold on. We gotta do the stuff. Where you visit us on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or use the short address, which is
esh.co. That is esh.co. The short address will bounce to the long one. You can check out any articles that have been written within the week. Any questions or comments should go to mailbag@landofesh.com. And we are available on iTunes for your listening pleasure.
That's right. You can subscribe to our podcast in iTunes by visiting the music store and searching for Electric Sisterhood. The beautiful little subscribe button pops up right next to our name. And when you click it, it ensures that you get our brand new episodes the moment that we put them out on the interwebs, especially when I don't make typos in the files. Thank you, everyone, for hooking me up with that, because I transpose numbers. All right? I have a little bit of dyslexia. Don't hate. But you can also get us in the Zune Marketplace if you're not living La Vida iTunes by searching for Electric Sisterhood again and hitting the subscribe button there. If you don't want to do that,
you can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But if you're looking for us, you should be looking for the other shows that hang out with us, too.
That's right, because we're not the only thing that makes up the Land of Esh. You can catch our episodes on Monday, but you can follow that up with an episode of the Boston Bastard Brigade, which is hosted by King Baby Duck and his fine bunch of bastards. You know, the dudes that talk about sports and games and music and movies chicks. And chicks and theater
and chicks
and chicks. Yeah. So,
and wrestling chicks.
Yeah, especially wrestling chicks. So if you want a little bit of that in your life, you know, to balance out our yin, because they are yin. No, we are the yin to their yang, or they are the yang to our yin.
I never understood what color we women. I thought women were considered the dark parts.
So we are were, we? I thought yeah. we were the light part.
No.
Mm-hmm. I have to do some research.
It's China.
Oh, right. You're right. So there's that. Then on Wednesday, you have a brand new episode of the Geek Agro Podcast, which is held down by our boy Deuces Wild. Then for the rest of the week, we have all the stuff that we write on our respective websites, which you can find conveniently in one place if you like, at landofesh.com. You can also cop the latest issue of our magazine, with a new one coming up pretty soon. We've got recommendations for holiday buying, people. So you get ready. Make sure that you get that. You can also get it digitally if you prefer. Which, you know, who doesn't like the digital? Don't raise your hand. You're such a liar. Then there's all the stuff that we have on our Twitters. You can find everybody on my Twitter page, twitter.com/ninjasister. The Land of S Lish has
Ish.
Yeah, I said Lish. Has everybody who's ever contributed to anything that we've made here at the Land of Esh. That includes the website, the magazine, podcast, guest hosts, everybody's there. I highly recommend that you check out the list. And if you want to ask us questions and you don't feel like doing the email thing, or you want to get like quasi real-time feedback, hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh. We're all there. We watch, we listen, we learn. Like us! Just saying.
What shit you dig?
It's kind of obvious.
Steve?
I dig Steve Jobs.
Okay.
And I miss him.
Okay.
What shit you digging?
My fucking cock tags.
They did. They are kind of sweet. Not even gonna lie.
Yep, they're the Gears 2 cock tags, so they're not the big, brilliantly shiny ones.
Right.
But I still have cog tags, which now makes me sexy plus, like, 1,500.
It does, actually.
So
it is a massive bump in your sexy.
It makes me quasi-uber sexy.
Oh, no, you're uber sexy.
No, it's still quasi because I have to, like, wear it for so long before it ferments.
Right, Uber. That's true. It's got to set.
So it's quasi right now because I have not Lost Odyssey linked the ability of the Uber Awesome into my set yet.
Gotcha.
I'm working on that leveling.
Well, there you have it. So, as always, I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are out.
See you guys next week. Hope my voice comes back.
Me too.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels. The troublemakers. The round pegs in the square holes. The ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them. Because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.